Well, here we go again. Are you saying that none of these ideas and feelings are yours? That this whole program could be wrong? Are you telling me that this entire experience of my conversation with you could be nothing more than a compilation of my thoughts and feelings on a thing?
Consider the possibility that I am giving you your thoughts and feelings on a thing. Where do you suppose these are coming from? That I am co-creating with you your experiences. That I am part of your decisions, choices, and declarations. Consider the possibility that I have chosen you, along with many others, to be my messenger long before this conversation came to be.
That's hard for me to believe.
Yet I will speak to this world, and I will do it, among other ways, through my teachers and my messengers. And in this book I will tell your world that its economic, political, social, and religious systems are primitive. I observe that you have the collective arrogance to think they are the best. I see the largest number of you resisting any change or improvement which takes anything away from you. Never mind who it might help. I say again, what is needed on your planet is a massive shift in consciousness, a change in your awareness, a renewed respect for all of life, and a deepened understanding of the interrelatedness of everything.
Well, you're God. If you don't want things to where they are, why don't you change them?
As I've explained to you before, my decision from the beginning has been to give you the freedom to create your life, and hence yourself, as you wish to be. You cannot know yourself as the creator if I tell you what to create, how to create, and then force, require, or cause you to do so. If I do that, my purpose is lost. But now, let us just notice what has been created on your planet, and see if it doesn't make you a bit indignant. Let's look at just four inside pages of one of your major daily newspapers on a typical day. Pick up today's paper.
Okay, it's Saturday, April 9th, 1994, and I'm looking at the San Francisco Chronicle.
Good. Open it to any page.
All right, here's page A7.
Fine. What do you see there?
Well, the headline says, Developing Nations to Discuss Labor Rights.
Excellent. Go on.
The story reports on what it calls an old schism between industrialized nations and developing nations over labor rights. Leaders of some developing nations are said to be, quote, fearful that a campaign to expand labor rights could create a backdoor means of barring their low-wage products from the rich nation's consumer markets, close quote. It goes on to say that negotiators for Brazil, Malaysia, India, Singapore, and other developing nations have refused to establish a permanent committee of the World Trade Organization which would be charged with drafting a labor rights policy.
What rights is the story talking about?
It says basic rights for workers, such as prohibitions on forced labor, establishment of workplace safety standards, and a guarantee of the opportunity to bargain collectively.
And why do developing nations not want such rights as part of an international agreement? I'll tell you why. But first, let's get clear that it's not the workers in those countries who resist such rights. Those negotiators for the developing nations are the same people or are closely allied with the same people who own and run the factories. In other words, the rich and powerful. As in the days before the labor movement in America, those are the people now benefiting from the mass exploitation of workers. You can be sure that they are being quietly assisted by big money in the U.S. and other rich nations, where industrialists, no longer able to unfairly exploit workers in their own nations, are subcontracting to factory owners in these developing countries for building their own plants there in order to exploit foreign workers who are still unprotected from being used by others to increase their already obscene profits.
But the story says it's our government, the present administration, which is pushing for workers' rights to be part of a worldwide trade agreement.
Your current leader, Bill Clinton, is a man who believes in basic workers' rights, even if your powerful industrialists don't. He's courageously fighting big money's vested interest. other American presidents and leaders throughout the world have been killed for less.
Are you saying President Clinton is going to be murdered?
Well, let's just say there are going to be tremendous powers attempting to remove him from office. They've got to get him out of there just as they had to remove John Kennedy 30 years earlier. Like Kennedy before him, Bill Clinton is doing everything big money hates. Not only pressing for workers' rights worldwide, but siding with the little person over the entrenched establishment on virtually every social question. He believes it's the right of every person, for instance, to have access to adequate health care. Whether or not he or she can afford to pay the exorbitant prices and fees that America's medical community has come to enjoy. He has said these costs have got to come down. That has not made him very popular with another very large segment of America's rich and powerful, from pharmaceutical manufacturers to insurance conglomerates, from medical corporations to business owners having to provide decent coverage for their workers. A great many people who are now making a lot of money are going to have to make a little bit less if America's poor are to be given universal health care. This is not making Mr. Clinton the most popular man in town, at least not among certain elements who have already proven in this century that they have the ability to remove a president from office.
Are you saying?
I'm saying that the struggle between the haves and the have-nots has been going on forever and is epidemic on your planet. It will ever be thus so long as economic interests, rather than humanitarian interests, run the world. So long as man's body and not man's soul is man's highest concern.
Well, I guess you're right. On page A14 of the same paper, there's a headline, "Recession Spawns Anger in Germany." The lower headline reads, "With joblessness at post-war high, rich and poor grow further apart."
Yeah, and what does this story say?
Well, it says there's great foment among the country's laid-off engineers, professors, scientists, factory workers, carpenters, and cooks. It says the nation has encountered some economic setbacks, and there are widespread feelings this hardship has not been fairly distributed.
That's correct. It has not been. Does the story say what has caused so many layoffs?
Yes, it says the angry employees are, quote, "workers whose employers have moved to countries where labor is cheaper."
Aha. I wonder whether many people reading your San Francisco Chronicle on this day saw the connection between the stories on pages A7 and A14.
Ah. The story also points out that when layoffs come, female workers are the first to go.
Mm-hmm.
It says women comprise more than half of the jobless nationwide and nearly two-thirds in the East.
Of course. Well, I continue to point out, though most of you do not want to see it or admit it, that your socioeconomic mechanism systematically discriminates against classes of people. You are not providing equal opportunity, all the while you are loudly protesting that you are. You need to believe your fiction about this, though, in order to keep feeling good about yourself, and you generally resent anyone who shows you the truth. You will all deny the evidence, even as it is being presented to you. Yours is a society of ostriches. Well, what else is in the newspaper on this day?
On page A4 is a story announcing new federal pressure to end housing bias. It says federal housing officials are putting together a plan that would force the most serious efforts ever to eliminate racial discrimination in housing.
What you must ask yourself is, why must such efforts be forced?
We have a Fair Housing Act which bars discrimination in housing on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, national origin, disability, or family composition. Yet many local communities have done little to eliminate such bias. Many people in this country still feel that a person ought to be able to do what he wants to do with his private property, including rent to or not rent to whomever he chooses.
Yet if everyone who owned rental property were allowed to make such choices, and if those choices tended to reflect a group consciousness and a generalized attitude towards certain categories and classes of people, then entire segments of the population could be systematically eliminated from any opportunity to find decent places in which to live. And in the absence of decent, affordable housing, land barons and slumlords would be able to charge exorbitant prices for terrible dwellings, providing little or no upkeep. And once again, the rich and powerful exploit the masses, this time under the guise of property rights.
Well, property owners should have some rights.
Yet when do the rights of the few infringe upon the rights of the many? That is, and always has been, the question facing every civilized society. Does there come a time when the higher good of all supersedes individual rights? Does society have a responsibility to itself? Your fair housing laws are your way of saying yes.